The Telegraph. The Telegraph. Podcasts.
Oprah, Hillary Clinton, and Robert De Niro walk into a park. This isn't another of my bad jokes, but just a few of the guests who gathered in Central Park to celebrate Ralph Lauren's 50th anniversary catwalk show. You're listening to Fashion Unzipped. Thanks for joining us. I'm Charlie Gowans-Eglinton, and with me in the studio today is Caroline Leeper.
Hi.
Lisa Armstrong joins us on the phone, having arrived back home from New York Fashion Week late last night. Lisa, thanks for joining us. Before we get to next season's trends, let's talk about what everyone's wearing now. What stood out for you?
Well, initially, the first few days, there was so much colour. I mean, when I was sitting at the Kate Spade show, it was hard to differentiate between what the front row was wearing. I think Deepak Chopra was there and Kate Bosworth and other celebrities. I mean, obviously, they're all dressed by the house, but everybody was wearing colour that day. But I think since then, it's just been constant rain and cold, which is not what we want from New York in September. And I think everyone's just cobbling leather looks together from what's in their suitcase. A lot of trench coats.
It's totally rained on the parade, hasn't it? By the way, hi Lisa, it's Caroline.
Hi Caroline. Yeah, it has. It has. But then on the other hand, I think for all of us, you know, looking at those street style pictures, it's quite nice to see some more realistic looks. You know, I've been reading a few pieces in the last few days about how a lot of influencers have been bypassing New York Fashion Week because it's financially, it's not worth their while. I mean, the fact that the business model for being an influencer, it seems to be shifting under their feet all the time, actually. So in the beginning, I think you could just write to a fashion house and say, hi, I'm an influencer, and can I have a seat at your show? And because PRs were a bit sort of caught in the headlamps and didn't really know how to handle this new social media, it was easy. You could get in. And also, people got followers very quickly in those days. But now that the social media is sort of bedding down a bit, the whole thing is much harder. Influencers don't automatically get seats. Some of them parade up and down the shows and hop on the bus back home afterwards without ever getting into a show. I think that whole bubble has burst, actually. I noticed far fewer people posing outside the shows this time. I mean, that may have been because of the weather, but I don't think it was only that, because I remember being in the snow in February, one New York, and there were people posing in transparent blouses with no bras on underneath. I mean, they would take their coats off to go outside.
Do you think as a result then that we're seeing more realistic looks because there are more real people there with real jobs and real work to do?
Maybe, but you know, the real look, I mean, what it's so difficult to call it. I mean, so many fashion editors, you know, who have jobs to do, I mean, as in writing, not just posting on Instagram, you know, they look really great, but they're wearing navy or they're wearing denim, or and they're wearing shoes that are made for walking, because you can't always get an Uber or a cab. So it doesn't necessarily make, in the eyes of the photographers who don't necessarily have a fashion eye, they just have an eye for what is eye-catching. It doesn't make a strong picture. So I think it's a very interesting season in terms of street style, because street style has been such a huge thing at the shows.
It's that thing, isn't it, Lisa, of it slightly being a compliment when you don't have your picture taken? Because when you're just wearing, and I'll often just wear a navy blazer and jeans and try and fit into that kind of effortless, chic, Parisian look with, you know, varying results. But when you do have your picture taken, it tends to be because you've got a really bonkers handbag or you look like a model.
Yeah, it's when I remember I went through one season where the cameras kept just zooming right in on my bag or my shoes. It was never me. It was just about the sort of the garnishing. So that does make you feel just like a walking piece of a shop window, which is not what I want to feel. It's very nice not to have to tread past blatant narcissists. But having said that, I mean, I love looking at great street style. I find it inspiring. I like to see how people are putting looks together. And actually, we're doing a sort of the rain parade in tomorrow's paper. And, you know, I love looking at seeing how those women have managed to look much chicker than I did in the rain, because I packed all the wrong clothes.
This is true. I feel like I've learnt 10 new ways to wear a coat this week, if nothing else.
back to the catwalks, let's start with Ralph Lauren. So this is the man who dressed Diane Keaton in Annie Hall and every First Lady since Betty Ford. Lisa, what was the atmosphere like in that room?
It was amazing because, first of all, the rubbernecking was just beyond. I mean, you think, oh, that looks like Robert De Niro. Oh, my God, it is Robert De Niro. And, you know, there's Martha Stewart kind of wandering lonely as a cloud. There was at one point between the cocktails and the dinner, and she seemed as though she didn't have anyone to talk to. I almost thought, oh, should I go over and take care of Martha? And then I thought, no, it's Martha Stewart. I'm sure she doesn't need me to take care of her. but yeah, and then, you know, the show started with 170 models. Normally you think, oh, my gosh, we're in for a long evening. But it was quite fabulous to see every kind of Ralph look there, from, you know, Navajo to British tweeds to that equestrian thing. I mean, my favourite sort of Ralph style is, you know, the 90s bias cut dresses with a jacket just tossed on. That's kind of effortless glamour, which, you know, someone like Lauren Hutton just encapsulated. I really love that. And then you got the sort of a very ethnically diverse bit where, you know, if you were going to be ultra critical, you'd say, that took a long time coming, that ethnic diversity. Because, you know, often the campaigns were criticised for being very, very white.
Is this the casting you mean?
Yeah, this is the casting in the show. But, you know, better late than never. And I think also you sort of have to look at things in the context of their era. So, you know, his ads were very mono ethnic, really, in the 80s, but so was everything else. So it was good to see that coming in, the diversity, and it was amazing. It just reminded you of why, you know, there were three huge designers in American fashion, Ralph, Calvin Klein, and Donna Karan, who were just famous in every corner of the globe, even, you know, places where the actual main collections didn't sell. Their names meant something. And Ralph's the only one still in his own house. He's still standing. So it was moving, actually. And I think people can be a bit cynical about Ralph Lauren and how glossy and sort of airbrushed it all is. But when you saw that retrospective, it was impressive.
The last Ralph I went to, Lisa, a couple of seasons ago, we all got driven kind of an hour outside of New York and he'd
to his
put
house,
on this...
Right?
It was actually to where he stores his collection of vintage cars.
Yeah.
So then we got the tour around all the cars, and I mean, slightly wasted on me because they were very shiny and lovely, but I didn't know what anything was. And then had the show kind of in amongst the cars and then this dinner. But the rumour at that show was, you know, this is such a huge spectacle. This has got to be his last show. Were those rumours around this show as well? Did it feel like a last hurrah?
It didn't feel like a last hurrah. I mean, he is 79. But I think people would be busy trying to get pictures of Hillary Clinton and make best friends with Oprah. No, it didn't. I mean, I guess, you know, it can't be too long before he does retire. But the company has, you know, gone through what companies like to call a major restructuring in the last few years, a.k.a. turmoil, quite frankly. I mean, you know, they're a huge company, but profits have dipped, sales have dipped. You know, there's been a lot of talk about, is that whole aspirational kind of glossy East Coast thing, is that even still relevant today? And it did feel like they were playing catch-up. But I think he'll want to, if he can, hang on and see the company on an upward trajectory again before he goes.
Away from Ralph Lauren and into what we actually kind of want to buy. Caroline, have you seen anything that made you want to get your wallet out?
There were a couple of standout things for me. I thought Escada was really interesting. I know that sounds like such a blast from the past and everybody's probably sitting at home thinking, what? But it was the 40th anniversary show, but it was the second from, is it Niall Sloan? Is that how I pronounce his name?
Don't ask me.
It's a great attempt.
Let's say Niall Sloan.
Sounds good.
But yeah, like I just think that's a house that's being revived by somebody interesting and someone who's bringing a different take to it. Yeah, really cool. The other one that really stood out for me was Carolina Herrera, yesterday that was in New York, and that was Wes Gordon's debut there. And again, it was just somebody bringing a really fresh sense to a house that we all know and love. But yeah, it just felt really cool.
He'd taken some of her kind of core designs, you know, that full skirt, and really made it his own. And I loved the blazers.
There were so many of her kind of hallmark things in their hair, but he'd also done very clever things with colour to make it look really modern. Those combinations just made it all seem really fresh.
I mean, a show that stood out for me, not necessarily always for the right reasons, was Brandon Maxwell. It's the first time I'd been to his show, and he was, you know, being touted as the bright new thing a few seasons ago in New York. It was very colourful and really quite, it was very cheesy. And I you know, I've written that it kind of, it was like going down Broadway, being assaulted by colours and lights and dancing girls. And, it's, you know, the tone was somewhere between Pretty Woman, bodycon, you know, navels, and kind of Gypsy Rose Leaf. But what stood out from that show in the best possible way were a couple of ball skirts in beautiful silk satin. And I did think, hey, Carolina Herrera lives, because at that point they hadn't seen her show. And I thought, well, even if Carolina Herrera, you know, if the new designer doesn't do it there, Brandon's carrying that flame. Yeah. I love a ball skirt that you wear with a shirt or a little sweater. It's just such a nice idea. I've never done it, probably never will, but I like the idea.
Brandon Maxwell's Lady Gaga's stylist and collaborator, isn't he? So I wonder if she's being tipped for Oscars and things.
Well, she, and also she's dressing in a much more sophisticated way now, isn't she?
Yeah.
It's interesting to see her progression. And then you forget that when she first hit fame and, you know, was wearing dresses made of meat and stuff like that, she was 23 or something. The other show that stood out, which again, like Escada, people might think, what? Was Kate Spade. There's a new designer there called Nicola Glass. She's Belfast, that's not the only reason to support her. She did a great job. She, you know, these big American democratically priced labels often end up kind of catering to lowest common denominator. It's high profit margins. You know, the quality goes right down. It's just pile it high and sell it fast. And she has gone in, and in the few months she's been there, she's totally retooled so many product lines. It all looked much more sophisticated. I was really impressed with the bags. She's, even the simple pouches, she's sort of made them into something that you'd be really pleased to carry. And they looked much more expensive than they were. Beautiful silk, crepe de chine dresses. Not all of them silk, I'm sure. And instead of going for that 60s vibe and 50s vibe, that was, Kate Spade herself was so brilliant at that, but over the years since she left, it's become very kitsch, that look, I think. She, Nicola Glass, went for a much more of a 70s vibe, which is not only sort of in tune with fashion, but it's just so easy and it suits so many women. That was a really great example of what New York Fashion Week does well, i.e. sort of fashion for the many.
Especially, I think, the fashion media, but anyone with kind of deeper pockets has in the past been a bit snobby about, you know, handbags at that kind of £300-400 range.
Yeah.
Do you think that's shifting?
Completely changed. I mean, you know, and fashion editors, the thing in the front row and second and third was to have, you know, the status bag of the season. Well, there is no one bag of the season anymore. And people aren't, it's interesting. I mean, yes, there are a few status bags, of course there are, but although they tend to be very small, the bigger the status symbol on the bag, the logo, the smaller the bag. But what also is a thing now is people carrying bags from new designers that no one else knows about. They tend to be much more moderately priced.
Mm. Well, Caroline's a big fan. Is it Wandler, Caroline, that
No, Danse Lente.
Danse Lente.
Wandler's another one. I am emailed every single week, I would say, by a new little bag brand that's pitching around the £300 to £500, £600 level. So in other words, it's expensive enough that you really hope that some thought and detail and love has gone into it, but it's not such a price that it's your whole month's mortgage and more.
What's clever about those brands is that each of them's got a sort of signature shape. They really stand out as being a really differently designed thing.
True, without having loads of logos.
Yeah, exactly. They know that they can't compete with those huge logos brand bags. So they think, oh, well, what's our thing? And they've discovered it's about having a shape. And that shape is just as Instagram worthy and just as exciting and as much of a talking point as seeing somebody with a logo that you instantly recognise.
Well, it started with Mansur Gavriel, I think,
yeah,
a couple of years ago. And they brought out that bucket bag that just kept selling out and selling out and selling out. And they weren't exorbitantly priced. You know, you could save up and afford them. It was that £300 to £500 sweet spot that we talk about in shopping, that, you know, it's a special treat. It's maybe your birthday or a Christmas present or, you know, got a new job present. But it doesn't have branding on it, which was such a departure from the kind of it bags that had come before.
I think that at sweet spot pricing is running through the whole of fashion. I mean, look at the runaway success of Ganni. Mm. Every time I see someone in a Ganni dress, I'm surprised that it's Ganni. I shouldn't be, but because it looks so good. You know, self-portrait, he showed it. I mean, he's based in London, but he showed in New York. Great pieces. And his front row, which was, you know, usual celebs in it, they looked fantastic. You know, they were wearing, again, $500, $600 dresses, not $2,000 dresses. It's so nice to see these indie labels come through and create space for themselves. And actually, in that, I think social media has been amazing for them, because if you've got a distinctive look, you can cut through with no advertising budget at all. It's making fashion so much more accessible.
And Lisa, what about your own New York wardrobe? I mean, do you
I started off well, I have to say. I was quite happy. What was I wearing? I had some co-ords that I bought, some Victoria Beckham co-ord skirt and
what
top
colour?
Stripy. It's cornflower blue, which I love, and it was summery. And that was fine the first day. And I had my fab new MIH jeans, which are quite high-waisted. They give you such a narrow waist, and then they flare. But, you know, on seriously, once it got cold and rainy, I mean, there was one day when I think I did look like Farmer Giles, because I just did not have the right heels, people. I was trying to, you know, keep my luggage really light, and I only took about 3 pairs of shoes. What was I thinking? So yeah, memo to self, pack a lot more shoe options, because I think the shoe options, this sounds so kind of fashion-y, doesn't it? But you can really make your look work if you've got the right heel. But you can have the most fabulous dress in the world, but if you've got the wrong shoes, it all goes wrong.
Lisa, there's a picture. This will make you feel better. There's a picture of me from New York a couple of seasons ago that's floating around the internet. It was a rainy day, and I'm wearing I'm wearing a puffer jacket. It was one of those minus 17 February kind of days. And Gabriella Hearst very kindly left on the seat, every seat, a cashmere cushion, using the offcuts of the cashmere that she'd used in her coats and in her designs.
Very nice.
Very nice. So there's a picture of me carrying this cushion under my arm, because I wasn't in a car. I was just, you know, hot-footing it between shows, and she was in the morning, and wearing a puffer jacket, and I think I've got trainers on, and I look like I've had some kind of New York Fashion Week-related breakdown.
I'm Googling it now.
can somebody tell me how one gets rid of incriminating pictures on Google? Because there are quite a lot of me.
It's not possible.
I don't think you... Because I used to work for a magazine that... used to make us do kind of what we're wearing to work pictures once a week. And I was in my early 20s.
Another paper that shall remain nameless. I used to have, you know, what I'm wearing this week pictures. Ugh. And I would often sort of do jokey things. But they now just appear on the internet out of context. And I'm really hoping people don't think that I ever seriously wore a sequined Union Jack mini Jerry Halliwell inspired dress for next.
Lisa,
that's a joke.
I can't believe you're saying this, because
aside from the Fenext,
explain yourself.
Aside from the Fenext, I was wearing exactly this garment at the weekend, Lisa, on a hen do, on my own hen do.
Her own hen do. The pictures
I can't
are
believe
fantastic.
You just, yes.
Very Halliwell dress.
Yes. Fantastic. Not Fenext, but I mean for Amazon or something similar. But fancy dress. But yes, I do really hope that those pictures never make it into a place out of context where you think I was really wearing it.
They do. I hope they do crown. I need company.
Perhaps that's a forever fashion piece, though. If you've both done it,
perhaps it's a gallery.
We could make it happen
for the website.
Please, let's get Google. I mean, an act of mercy. Erase the incriminating evidence, I say.
Or perhaps if you're listening to this and you too have been photographed in a sequin Union Jack, Jerry Halliwell circus Spice Girls dress, please write in.
Send pictures.
I mean, it happens to the nicest, best people, because, you know, if you put something on Instagram, that can just end up on the internet. So, true. Lessons to be learnt.
Oh, dear.
I learned many at the weekend.
I'm amazed you're here today, Caroline.
Well, thank you. No, I recovered very well. It was a good time was had by all, but yes, I did look incredibly silly and flammable.
What trends are you loving from New York Fashion Week? And how much would you spend on a handbag? Get in touch with your opinions, questions and feedback at unzipped@telegraph.co.uk. We'd love to hear from you. And visit telegraph.co.uk/fashion for more from the catwalks. We've nearly reached the end of the episode, but before we go, we've just got time to find out what everyone's excited about this week. Lisa?
Well, I'm obviously excited about London Fashion Week. I'm also doing a Q&A with Anya Heimarch as part of her sort of extravaganza. Don't know what questions we're going to be asking her yet, but I'm looking forward to doing that. I think we're going to be sitting beneath the world's biggest indoor cloud, as you do.
Lisa, can our listeners come and watch you speak to Anya?
The tickets are on sale, but I think they've sold out. But there are other great sounding events in that whole Anya Heimarch. I mean, she's got you know, professors talking about sleep and what it does to our brains. And she's got Claudia Winkleman reading bedtime stories. There's a whole list of things on their website, AnyaHeimarch.com, I think. Yeah, maybe if there's a wait and a long enough waiting list, we'll put on a second show, although I don't know how, because I've got to go and see some other shows after.
What else are you excited about from London?
Well, Burberry. I'm really excited to see what Riccardo Tisci's going to do there. I like the new logo. It's been very controversial, but I liked it. And I think he's going to really pull out all the stops for the first show. I think it'll be very different, and that's energising. And also, you know, obviously it's lovely to see Erdem and Moxander and Christopher Kane.
And Victoria Beckham's come home this season for her 10-year anniversary.
Yes, well, that would be fabulous to be able to see that. Dave, it's looking like a really strong schedule. And there are new names coming through as well. So, I think it should be a really great few days.
Caroline, what about you?
Well, I'm excited for London as well. There's loads of stuff on the schedule that I am really into. Rixo are doing their first show on schedule, which I think is really cool. They're a brand that
they're another one of those scanny type brands that do great price clothes.
Yeah, that you can actually afford, and some of it will be on sale straight after, and, you know, that's always great. But also, I've got to say, we are now but 10 days away, people, from the wedding day. So next Friday I get married, so I'm Woo! Yeah, I know. So as soon as the shows are over, I'm snapping into Bridezilla mode. Joking.
You are the least Bridezilla-like bride I think I have ever encountered. You know, you're so calm.
Thanks, Lisa.
I don't know how you do it.
We're still waiting for it to drop in the office, Lisa.
Yeah, one day I'll just come in.
See a bit of Bridezilla, come on.
Now, I feel like we've dealt with most of the things that I mean, I'm sure they're not listening, maybe they are, but guests who are dropping in and dropping out and messing about and things. I feel like we've done most of that now.
Right.
We're through that bit. They're the only things that can really annoy you and go wrong.
Yeah, unless on the day, you know, you get 10 extra people or 10 fewer people, but what the hell?
I'm just not going to look at them.
No, and the people you care about and who care about you will be there. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
More cake for everyone else.
Yeah. I have a gesture which I'm doing to my sister, which is if I'm not going to deal with something, she'll just take it.
Oh. And what's her means of taking it?
Make it go away.
Okay.
Make it go away. That's what that means. Although one of my friends on the hen do was in tears. She was like beside herself. She was so excited, but also scared and nervous about the wedding. I was like, calm down. Shouldn't this be me?
It's not your wedding. It's mine.
I know. It was one of my best friends. He's one of my bridesmaids. She was like, I'm just so nervous and excited. And I was just like, calm down.
Maybe
calm
you can
down.
Be a bridesmaidzilla.
Well,
is
yes.
That a thing?
Yes, maybe she could.
Well, yours are all very glamorous. And I'm excited about TV again. guys, if I'm honest.
There's not much to be excited about.
Are you watching The Bodyguard?
I am. Obviously.
It's fantastic.
Riveting.
It is one of those things though, that you have to have your headphones on in the office, because I couldn't watch it on Sunday night.
What, you were watching it in the office?
No, as in, I came in on Monday, and thank goodness I had my headphones in, was listening to music while I wrote, because Bethan just threw out a spoiler straight away.
Bethan spoiled it. I was one behind, and she told me what happened, and I was like, oh.
There is some great TV on at the moment.
Killing Eve, guys. You've got to watch it. It's coming out. It starts on Sunday. I've only got to see a sneak preview of it because I interviewed Jodie Comer, who's in it for the Stella magazine cover last weekend. Oh, it's so good. She's a female assassin, which sounds mega cheesy, but it's not cheesy. It's Phoebe Waller-Bridge who's done the direction.
That's right, she wrote it, didn't she?
It's so good, yeah. And she's wearing everything in it. She's wearing Molly Goddard. She's wearing Dries. She's wearing, to go off and make her kills.
And that's what you need when you're an assassin. You've got to look good.
Well, I mean, I'm making it sound cheesy and naff, but it's so slick and it's really funny. It's really good. So it's Jodie Comer, who was in Dr. Foster, and it's Sandra Oh, who was in Grey's Anatomy and stuff like that. So she's Canadian.
Can I ask, in a professional mode, but secretly, because I just want to know for myself, what's everyone's Fashion Week purchase ahead of time? The piece that's going to make you feel not totally out of depth?
I think, for me, it's another Dunsay Lente bag. I've got two now.
It's a good question, Lisa, but I don't have an answer for you. I've not bought anything.
I didn't buy that specifically for this.
Because always before Fashion Week...
You are a rare specimen. I know. I have to take you to the Natural History Museum.
But I often go out and buy something that actually I don't need or I won't wear. I need to try and focus my mind and only buy things that I will wear the rest of the year too. Not things to impress my fellow fashion editors.
It's all a bit sensible, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think actually people are thinking more and more like that. The overconsumption is making itself felt amongst us all until it's about one day to go.
Although I must say, my problem is overconsumption of a different kind, because I'm still carrying a little bit of holiday weight, as in summer holiday weight, and not made any better by the fact that, inspired by the Great British Bake Off, we have an office...
The Telegraph Bake Off.
We've just had the second, quarterfinal?
Semifinal? No, it was the second heat, actually, Charlie.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
The level they were at, they could have been.
I was actually just there for the food. I did vote, but Caroline is competing.
I'm competing.
Wow.
She won the first heat.
I won the first heat with my...
Well, I didn't know you were a secret baker and you had a hen weekend.
Do you know...
Unbelievable.
It was the first cake I'd ever made. I'm not even joking. I'd made cookies before, but I'd never made a cake. And then I felt bad because...
Was it from a Betty Crocker packet?
No. It was a genuine recipe that I found online. It was all above board. And then here I am, and I'm through to the quarterfinals.
Do you know what, though? Wow. If this were a film, Caroline would be about to, she'd be about to go on some kind of rampage, because she's really calm about her wedding and she's just taking the time out 2 weeks out of her wedding to bake for the first time. Is something about to break?
What you're suggesting is that my life is about to implode in an explosion of Dunsay Lente bags.
I'm just saying it would make me feel a little bit better about my own life, because I'm not planning a wedding. I've not shopped for Fashion Week. And
you haven't entered Bake Off, the Telegraph Bake Off.
I've lost before I've begun.
To be fair, I don't think I'm going to make it through another round. Some of the ones that people offered up today had flowers on them and everything. It was really fancy today. I had, shall we say, an easier round.
Thanks for listening. Check back next week for a London Fashion Week special of Fashion Unzipped.